Hello, the latest world sport from the BBC now with me, Chris Mitchell. The top stories for you. Liverpool come from behind to defeat Aston Villa. Andy Murray battles back to win in Miami.
Murray with championship point now, and Murray's eyes widen. Can he finish it in one stroke? Hits his backhand down the line. Ferrer reaches it, but he can't get it over the net. And Murray drops his racket on the ground and looks to the skies. He cannot believe he's won this match.
And Oxford University win the 159th edition of the University Boat Race. Football first for you then, and Liverpool fought back from a goal down to seal a 2-1 victory at Aston Villa on Sunday. Paul Lambert's Villa side took the lead through the Belgian Christian Benteke. The Reds equalised shortly after half-time, Jordan Henderson with the goal, and Liverpool's captain Steven Gerrard scored the winner from the penalty spot after Nathan Baker brought down Luis Suarez in the area. The skipper hailed his side's performance.
It was a great game, you know, credit to Villa, they try and play football, and they try and get forward to Benteke as early as they can, and they cause you problems, so that's why we found ourselves down, one down at half-time, but we felt hard done by because we could have scored a couple ourselves, but it's a fantastic game, great to play in, and thankfully we've won it in the end.
He was a problem for you, Benteke. Suarez was a problem for them, but it didn't quite come off in that first half. Why was it?
I'm not sure. To be fair to Jamie Carragher, I thought he handled Benteke fantastically well because, you know, he is a monster, he's a handful and he's a fantastic player. So credit to our defence, keeping him as quiet as they can. And we know if we don't make any defensive mistakes, we've got the quality in the final third to score goals, and that's what we've done in the end.
Well, the win keeps Liverpool's European football hopes alive for next season. Only 3 points separates them and Arsenal. Here's the Liverpool manager, Brendan Rodgers.
I felt that we played reasonably well first half on created chances, but we could have done better, I felt, with a goal. I just thought that we needed to keep playing how we were playing, maybe be a wee bit more aggressive in our passing and our running. And I thought the opportunities was coming. You know, we had 22 shots at goal today, so as I said, I thought forward wise we were very offensive and very creative.
Suarez, what a player for you to have in your ranks, because he's so elusive, isn't he, for start?
Oh, he's incredible. You think this guy's been away, he's played a couple of games, travelled halfway across the world, came back. When I seen him on Friday morning, it looked like he didn't know what day it was. You know, the time zones, they're flipping from that. But he's absolutely incredible, and he'd be disappointed that he hasn't got a goal today. But he's, as you say, he puts defenders on the back foot, and in around the box, he's a real threat.
Meanwhile, the defeat left Aston Villa third from bottom in the English Premier League in the relegation zone. Now, a day after sacking Martin O'Neill, Sunderland have confirmed that the former West Ham striker and Swindon manager Paolo Di Canio has taken over as the manager at the Stadium of Light. Here's the BBC's Nick Barnes, the Sunderland commentator for BBC Newcastle.
Interesting appointment and a tall order for Di Canio, bearing in mind this is a team that are struggling to score goals and they've lost their leading scorer in Stephen Fletcher for the rest of the season as well. It's a very tough ask for Di Canio now, bearing in mind the games coming up as well, Chelsea away, the derby against Newcastle, and then a home game against Everton, against whom Sunderland have got a wretched record.
Nick Barnes there. Elsewhere in Europe, Marseille beat their southern rivals Nice 1-0 to stay in touch with the French league leaders Paris Saint-Germain. In Spain, last-place Deportivo La Coruña fought back for their first away win of the season on Sunday, beating Mallorca 3-2. Nuremberg in Germany fought back from two goals down to draw 2-2 at Wolfsburg, and Greuther Fürth remain without a home win in their debut Bundesliga season after losing 3-2 to Eintracht Frankfurt. To tennis here on the BBC World Service, and Andy Murray has become the world number two after defeating David Ferrer in the final of the Miami Masters event, from where the BBC's David Law reports.
And Ferrer suddenly looks utterly dejected. He can't believe it. He had Murray where he wanted him. He had championship point, but it's Murray with championship point now. And the forehand return into the net, but the first serve went long. So second serve for Ferrer. Murray's eyes widen. Can he finish it in one stroke? Hits his backhand down the line. Ferrer reaches it, but he can't get it over the net. And Murray drops his racket on the ground and looks to the skies. He cannot believe he's won this match, that he's won this title, that he is the world number two.
2 hours and 45 minutes of the most lung-busting, draining tennis imaginable ended with Andy Murray holding the trophy aloft and moving up to the number two ranking. It means that, for the first time since November 2003, nearly 10 years ago, neither Roger Federer or Rafael Nadal are ranked inside the world's top two. In sweltering conditions and strength-sapping humidity, David Ferrer stood just a point from winning the title himself, but a Murray forehand caught the very outside of the line. The British player started terribly, losing the first five games on his way to losing the opening set 6-2. He levelled at one set all as the match became an increasingly physical battle. Failing to convert match point floored Ferrer, who started to cramp, and it energised Murray, who won the deciding set tiebreak 7-1 for one of the hardest fought victories of his career.
It was a tough match, obviously. Physically it was tough, mentally it was hard as well. I mean, I don't quite know how much to come through it in the end. It could have easily gotten away from me, because I was up a break four times in the third set and should have done a better job at closing it out. But I mean, both of us were just kind of on our last legs at the end, fought right to the end and just managed to come through.
Andy Murray ending David Law's report there. Here in England on Sunday, Oxford won the 159th annual University Boat Race, beating the defending champions Cambridge by 1.5 lengths to gain revenge for its loss last year.
Oxford drive now towards the finishing line, and there is the white flag that goes down from Ben Kent, and it is a dark blue boat race on Easter Sunday in 2013.
Well, with around 250,000 people lining the banks of the River Thames in London, the heavier Oxford crew, featuring two Olympians from the 2012 London Games, never trailed on the 6.8-kilometre course. Here's the BBC's John Murray.
On a cold, breezy afternoon, the pre-race favourites Oxford took charge right from the off with a powerful start that saw them half a length up by the time they reached Craven Cottage. Oxford had won the toss and chosen the Surrey station, and while Cambridge fought back as they reached Hammersmith Bridge, by the time they passed under Barnes Bridge, Oxford had opened up clear water between the boats, and they crossed the finish line a length and a half ahead in a time of 17 minutes and 27 seconds. And after last year's race was disrupted by a protester, this year's passed off without incident, with Royal Marines in inflatable boats patrolling the riverbanks.
Oxford's Alex Davidson said winning the boat race was a dream come true.
To be trialling for the OEBC was a pipe dream. To be in the blue boat, just taking part in the race, was so unforeseeable. To be president of a club that wins both races is just such a dream come true. I'm just so happy.
Your crew had a remarkable rhythm, and word on the street was that in a head-to-head against the British 8 at Caversham a few weeks back, you actually beat them. Just how fast is your crew?
Well, you can only race who's put in front of you. We haven't lost anybody yet, so that tells you all. That's all I know about it. I can't say any more than that, unfortunately.
And your plans for the future?
Not sure past tonight, put it that way. I have no idea, to be honest. We'll have to see how it goes.
Athletics to finish for you. Oscar Pistorius' agent, Pete Van Zyl, has told the BBC that he's received numerous messages from event organisers saying they would love to see the athlete back competing on the track. Pistorius, who's run at both the Olympics and Paralympics, is charged with murdering his girlfriend, something he denies, but will be allowed to travel abroad after challenging his bail terms. And Van Zyl says he could compete again.
I think first and foremost, he's got to be ready to train and compete. He's the only one that's going to be able to determine that, not me or the coach is going to force him into anything. Once he's ready and he feels that he's up for training again, we will have him then back on the track training. I think World Championships realistically is a bit jumping the gun at this point in time. And if he does compete again this season and he achieves the qualification time, then obviously that is something that one would have to consider. But I think it's a bit early days to make that kind of comment.
Oscar Pistorius' agent, Pete Van Zyl. And that is the latest international sport.